time Pelion reached the corner, all four of them now standing stiffly at full military attention. Without a word or glance, Pelion passed through the group and rounded the corner. Four more guards were standing at attention behind the security post desk, 3 meters in front of an extra-secure-looking cell door. Seated at the desk, gazing up at Pelion with a mixture of uncertainty and surliness in his face, was a young major. He opened his mouth to speak.
"I'm Admiral Pelion."
Pelion cut him off.
"Supreme Commander of the Imperial Fleet. Open the door."
The major's cheek twitched. I'm sorry, Admiral, but I have orders that the prisoner is to be kept strictly incommunicado." For a few seconds, Pelion just stared at him. A glare developed and honed and fine-tuned by long decades of Imperial command.
"I'm Admiral Pelion,"
he said at last, biting out each word, his tone the verbal counterpart of that blade-edged glare. He'd been willing to give the guards the benefit of the doubt, but he had neither the time nor the inclination to put up with any nonsense whatsoever.
"Supreme Commander of the Imperial Fleet! Open the door!"
The major swallowed visibly. His eyes flicked away from Pelion to the dozen stormtroopers visible in the corridor behind him, his mind perhaps flicking to the other 12 stormtroopers out of sight around the corner that his guards would have told him about, then came reluctantly back to Pelion's face again.
"My orders come from Moff Deethra himself, sir,"
he said, the words coming out with difficulty. Beside Pelion, the stormtrooper commander stirred.
"Moff Deethra is a civilian,"
Pelion reminded the major, giving him one last chance.
"And I'm countermanding those orders."
The major took a careful breath.
"Yes, sir,"
he said, capitulating at last. Half turning, he nodded to one of the guards. The guard, who had also been eyeing the stormtroopers and had obviously already done the math, showed no hesitation whatsoever. Stepping quickly to the cell door behind him, he keyed it open and moved smartly aside.
"Wait here,"
Pelion told the stormtrooper commander, rounding the desk and stepping into the cell, his pulse pounding in his neck. If Deethra had somehow managed to get word here through the transmission blockade and ordered all witnesses disposed of... Seated at a small table, a hand of single sabacc laid out in front of him, Colonel Vermel looked up, his eyes widening in astonishment.
"Admiral?"
he said, clearly not sure he believed it.
"I..."
Abruptly, he scrambled to his feet.
"Colonel Mez Vermel, Admiral,"
he said briskly.
"Request permission to return to duty, sir."
"Request granted, Colonel,"
Pelion said, not bothering to hide his relief.
"And may I say how pleased I am to find you looking so well."
"Thank you, Admiral,"
Vermel said, heaving a sigh of relief of his own as he stepped around the table.
"I hope you didn't come alone."
"Don't worry,"
Pelion assured him grimly, waving Vermel to the cell door.
"I haven't exactly taken over Rimsey Station, but my men are in position to do so if any of Deesra's people take exception to our leaving."
"Yes, sir,"
Vermel said, throwing an odd look back at him.
"Regardless, may I suggest we hurry?"
"My sentiments exactly,"
Pelion agreed, frowning. There had been something in that look. They passed the major and the guard station without comment and headed around the corner. The stormtroopers, as per Pelion's earlier instructions, fell into full escort array, with 12 each front and rear.
"You didn't sound very confident when I mentioned Deesra's people a minute ago,"
Pelion commented as they headed down the long corridor.
"It may not be Deesra's authority you'll have to go up against, Admiral,"
Vermel said, moving a bit closer to Pelion as if worried about being overheard.
"When Captain Dorja brought me aboard after intercepting my ship at Morishim, he said he'd been personally ordered to do so by Grand Admiral Thrawn."
Pelion felt his throat tighten.
"Thrawn,"
Yes, sir, Vermel said. I've been hoping it was just some trick of Deesra's. I remember you mentioning how totally against these peace talks he was. But Dorja seemed so sure.
Yes,
Pelion murmured.
I've heard some of those rumors myself. He's allegedly been seen by various people in the New Republic, too.
Vermel was silent a moment. But you haven't actually seen him yourself?
No.
Pelion braced himself.
But I think it's time I did,
he said.
If he has indeed returned.
You might be in trouble with him for pulling me out, Vermel pointed out reluctantly, glancing back over his shoulder. Perhaps it would be better if I went back.
No,
Pelion said firmly.
Thrawn never punished his officers for doing what they sincerely thought was right. Especially when he hadn't given them orders or the necessary information to understand otherwise.
They reached the end of the corridor and turned into the main guard nexus. The guards and officers were still sitting where Pelion had left them, glowering under the silently watchful eye of yet another contingent of the Chimera's stormtroopers.
No. We're going to go back to Bastion and see what Moff Deesra has to say about all this.
He continued as they passed through the Nexus and headed toward the landing bay where their shuttles were berthed.
If the rumors are false, then we should have no further trouble with Moff Deesra. Commander Drafe and I have obtained a set of data cards, in Deesra's personal encrypt, no less, that lays out his entire operation. Names, places, and deals, including all his links to the Kavrilu pirates and various shady financiers on both sides of the border.
He felt his face harden.
And including the details of his efforts to incite civil war within the New Republic. That alone should be worth a great deal to us in any future negotiations with Coruscant. It will certainly put Deesra away for a long time.
Yes, sir. Vermel murmured. And if the rumors are true? Pelion swallowed.
If the rumors are true, we'll deal with them then.
Vermel nodded. Yes, sir.
In the meantime,
Pelion went on conversationally,
your last report is far overdue. I'd like to hear exactly what happened at Morishim.
Chapter 31. The preparations had taken 6 hours. 6 hours of frantic work, as every flight-worthy spaceship on Exocron was hurriedly fitted out for battle. It took another hour to get the whole ensemble into space, and one more to arrange them into something resembling a combat perimeter. And with that, their estimated 8-hour grace period was over. And now, with the entire Raykos pirate gang on its way, the most pitiful defense fleet Shada had ever seen stood by in trembling readiness to defend its world or die trying. Most likely to die trying.
Report from ground, Admiral David,
Chin reported from the Wild Cards Bridge comm station, looking over at the helm.
Supreme Admiral Dar says we all in good position. Also says air fleet ships ready if pirates get past.
Looming over Dankin, his hands clasped stiffly behind his back, Admiral Trey David nodded.
Very good,
he said, his formal tone nevertheless hinting at a great deal of energy below the surface.
Signal the rest of the fleet to be ready. They could be here at any moment.
Oh my!
3PO said miserably from beside Shada at the spotting station.
I do so hate space combat.
I can't argue with you on this one,
Shada agreed, looking over her status board. She had wondered at first, wondered with a great deal of suspicion, actually, why Admiral David would ask to direct the battle from the wild card instead of one of Exocron's own combat ships. But her subsequent assessment of those ships and their capabilities had unfortunately provided her with the answer. 8 hours ago, she had snidely suggested to N2 Nee that the Exocron Space Force might find anything more formidable than an occasional smuggler beyond its strength.
Never before in her life had one of her offhanded comments nailed the truth so accurately. There was a brush of air beside her.
"It becomes a waiting game now," Card said, kneeling down beside her seat. "What do you think?"
"We haven't got a chance,"
Shade had told him bluntly.
"Not unless Ray Koss doesn't bother to send anything bigger than the Corsairs he hit us with at Dayark."
She thought she'd spoken quietly enough for only Card to hear. David apparently had good ears.
"No, he'll bring everything he has,"
the Admiral assured her.
"His full armada, with himself at the head of it. He's wanted to get his hands on Exocron's wealth for a long time."
He smiled tightly.
"Besides which, I understand from Entune that you gave him something of a bruised eye at Dayark. For the revenge part alone, he'd be sure to be here."
Shada felt Card's silent sigh as a breath of warm air on her cheek.
"Which may ultimately give us our only real chance," he said. "If we can pretend to start running, we may be able to draw enough of them away from your forces to deal with the rest."
"Possibly,"
David agreed.
"Not that that would do us personally much good, of course."
"It's my fault he's here," Card reminded him. "It's not too late for you to transfer to one of the other ships."
At the sensor station, Hasishi suddenly snarled.
"Vita, they come. Vita, three Xynar Marauder class corvettes, four Dauphin Discrete class attack cruisers, four combat modified CSA Eti lighter freighters, and 18 Corsair class attack vessels."
"Confirmed,"
Shada said, running her eyes over her spotting displays, a sinking feeling in the pit of her stomach. The wild card could take on any one of those ships, or give any two of them a decent fight. But all of them together?
"Stand by, Turbolasers," Card said, rising to his feet beside her.
"Turbolasers standing by,"
Shada confirmed, keying targeting information over to the three weapon stations. Just because it was hopeless didn't mean they shouldn't do their best.
"Looks like the Corsairs are forming up a screen around the bigger ships."
"Captain,"
Chin called from the comm.
"We're getting call from one of the Marauders. You won't make him an answer?"
Shada could feel Card tense.
"Yes, go ahead,"
he said. Chin keyed the comm.
"Hi there, Card,"
a familiar gloating voice boomed from the bridge speaker.
"I told you you'd see me again before you died, didn't I?"
"Yes, Cern, you did,"
Card agreed, his voice betraying none of the tension Shada knew he was feeling.
"I'm surprised you're still alive after that fiasco at Dayark. Ray Koss must be going soft in his old age."
From the background came a distant flurry of Rhodian invective.
"Ray Koss says he'll maybe save you for last for that one. You like that, huh?"
Across the bridge, David cleared his throat.
"Ray Koss, this is Admiral Trey David of the Exocron Combined Air Space Fleet,"
he said.
"Oh, an admiral, huh?"
Zern said sarcastically.
"You mean this collection of scrap rates a whole admiral?"
"You're in violation of Exocron space,"
David said calmly, ignoring the insult.
"This is your last chance to withdraw peaceably."
Zern laughed.
"Oh, that's rich. That's really rich. We definitely gotta save you for last. Then we can cut you all and feed you to the scavengers."
There was another burst of Rhodian.
"Hey, we gotta go, Card. Time to make the big scrap into lots of little scrap. See you later, Admiral."
The comm keyed off.
"They're sure well stocked in the confidence department, aren't they?"
Shada murmured.
"Yes,"
Card said. His hand brushed past her shoulder, hesitated, then came back almost reluctantly to rest there.
"I'm sorry, Shada,"
he said, his voice just loud enough for her to hear.
"I should never have brought you into this."
It's all right,
Shada said. So this was it. The end of the long journey. Back at the Orowood Tower, facing the Nogri and their blasters, she had been ready to die. Had almost hoped they would overreact and kill her, in fact. The easy way out, she had thought then. Now, facing the incoming pirates, she realized that there were no easy ways out. No way of dying that didn't involve abandoning a responsibility or leaving necessary work undone. She glanced up at Card, gazing out the viewport, his face set in hard lines, or indeed, of leaving friends behind. Distantly, she wondered when in all of this she had started to think of Card as a friend. She didn't know. But it didn't matter. What mattered was doing their best to clean up the mess they'd created here. Shifting her attention back to her displays, she began tagging primary and secondary targets. The leading ships were almost in range.
Signal to all ships,
Admiral David announced.
Pull back! Repeat, pull back!
Shada flashed him a frown.
What?
I said pull back,
David repeated, flashing an almost curious look at her in return.
Which part didn't you understand?
Shada started to say something blistering, choked it back as Card squeezed her shoulder warningly. She was thinking about the fact that the wild card isn't as maneuverable close into a gravitational field as it is in open space, he told David. Neither are most of the ships in your fleet.
Understood, David said. The order remains. Pull back.
Chief? Duncan asked. Shada glanced up again. Card was looking at David, measuring the man with his eyes. Transmit the order, Chin, he said, his tone suddenly thoughtful. Duncan, go ahead and retreat, but keep us in formation with the other ships. Shada, have the gunners lay down covering fire.
Right.
Shada keyed her intercom, her eyes searching the displays as she tried to figure out what was going on. The usual tactical reason for pulling back toward a planetary surface was to lure an enemy within range of either ground-based weapons or a surface-launched ambush. But every ship Exocron had was already up here, and Hisishi's sensor probes would certainly have picked up any ground weaponry powerful enough to reach this far into space. The fleet was beginning to move now, backing toward Exocron as ordered. Some of the armed civilian ships were already firing uselessly at the Corsairs, arrowing silently in at them, wasting energy on out-of-range targets. Shada looked at David, but either he hadn't noticed or didn't especially care what they did. Were the civilians nothing but sacrificial lures to him?
Keep retreating, he said instead. All ships!
The Corsairs were nearly in range. The larger warships formed up behind them now in a straightforward assault line. Little wonder, considering the opposition. There was no need for them to try anything fancy. A straight slice through the ships arrayed against them, then probably a low strafing loop over Exocron's major population centers, taking out Supreme Admiral Dar's pitiful air fleet along the way.
Keep retreating,
David said again.
Tactical display, please.
Hisishi hissed acknowledgement, and the tactical overlay came up. The defenders were all well within Exocron's gravity field now, far too late for any of them to change their minds and try to escape to hyperspace. Was that what David was going for? Shada wondered. Putting them in a position where they had no choice but to fight to the death? Even as that disturbing thought occurred to her, the last of the pirates passed within that invisible boundary as well. They were all totally committed to this battle now. Neither the attackers nor the defenders would be leaving Exocron until one side or the other had been destroyed.
Here they come,
David murmured. Shada looked at him, a bitter retort bubbling in her throat. Of course they were coming! And abruptly, Hisishi snarled in disbelief. Shada snapped her attention back to the viewport. The pirates were still there, still coming. But they weren't the ones David had been referring to. Behind the pirates' line, something else had appeared. It was a spaceship, of course.
but it was a ship like nothing Shada had ever seen. Roughly ovoid, half again as big as the Marauders, it was covered with thick hull plates that gave it the appearance of some sort of armored sea creature. Conical projections, possibly exhaust ports or thruster pods, jutted out from the hull with no symmetry or pattern that Shada could spot. A magnified image popped up on one of the displays, showing an intricate array of symbols and alien glyphs covering the hull. At close range, the hull itself looked disturbingly like something alive. Someone on the bridge swore, very quietly. Shada looked at the viewport again, just in time to see three more of the ships wink into existence. Not jump in with the characteristic flicker of pseudo-motion of a normal hyperspace jump, but simply appear. And then, almost casually, the first alien ship drove up behind one of Raykos's marauders, and with a glittering, filigreed sheet of blue-green energy discharge, sliced it in half.
Isishi snarled. What are these?
She demanded.
They're called the Angti Monks, David said, his tone a strange mixture of satisfaction and awe. Alien beings who spend most of their lives near the Cathal Rift. There's not a lot we know about them.
Yet they're coming to your aid, Card pointed out. More significantly, you knew they would.
They hate slavers, David said. Raykos is a slaver. It's very simple.
A second marauder flashed with fire and streaming air as one of the other Angti ships set another of the strange flower blossoms of energy through its side. Ahead of the wrecked ships, the confident battle line collapsed as the remaining attackers swung around to face this new threat that had appeared so unexpectedly behind them. But to no avail. The Angti ships shrugged off the frantic turbolaser fire with ease as they systematically drove through the attackers' ranks, cutting up the larger ships and crushing the smaller ones against their own hulls.
I'm afraid it's not quite that simple, Admiral, Card said to David. According to Bombassa, Raykos has been setting up in this area for the past year. Why did your Angti wait this long to move against them?
As I said, they prefer to stay near the rift, David said. It takes something special to make them come out even as far as Exocron.
In other words, Card said quietly, you needed someone to lure Raykos into their territory, and that someone was us.
David didn't move, but Shada could see a subtle new tension now in his face and posture. Perhaps wondering what would happen to him if a bridge full of hardened smugglers decided to be offended at having been used as bait.
It was your actions we used, Captain Card, he said. Your decision to come to Exocron and your inability to keep Raykos's people from tracking you. It wasn't you personally we were using.
His eyes flicked around the bridge.
Not any of you.
For a long moment, the bridge was silent. Shada looked back at the viewport to find the destruction of the pirates nearly complete. Only three of the Angti were visible now, and as she watched, another of them winked out, leaving as mysteriously as it had arrived. The last two alien ships stayed just long enough to finish their task before they too vanished into the darkness.
"You say we," Card said. Is that just you and the rest of the Exocron military?
That's an odd question, David said obliquely. Who else could be involved?
Who indeed? Card murmured. Jin, open a transmission frequency to the surface. 3PO, I want a message translated into Old Tarmidian for me.
Shada looked up at him. Card's face was carved from stone, his expression unreadable.
Old Tarmidian? She asked, frowning. Cardass's language?
He nodded.
Here's the message, 3PO. This is Card. I'd like permission to come down and see you again.
Of course, Captain Card,
3PO said, moving uncertainly over toward the comm station.
Chin nodded, and the droid leaned over his shoulder.
Merirau Kar Tuliak. Mu Perilon, si Tufriad Mo Subpo Parai.
He looked back at Card.
You understand, of course, that there may not be an answer for some time.
Sepo Prustai,
a voice boomed from the speaker, making the droid jump. A strong, vibrant voice, with no hint of weakness or illness. Shada looked up at Card again, to find his stone-like expression had hardened even further.
Translation?
He asked. 3PO seemed to brace himself.
He said, sir, come ahead.
N2Ni was waiting for them as the wild card put down again in Circle 15 of the Reen Tata City landing field. His casual manner, his cheerful chatter, and the landspeeder ride along with Shada and 3PO toward the pale blue house against the mountain were like a ghostly repetition of Card's last trip through the area a few hours earlier. But there was one big difference. Then the driving emotions behind his mood had been fear and dread, and the morbid contemplation of his own looming death. Now he wasn't sure what his mood was. Puzzlement and uncertainty, perhaps? Tinged with a hint of resentment at having been twitched along like a puppet. And overlaying it all, a renewed haze of dread. Cardass, he couldn't help remembering, had always spoken fondly of predators who played with their prey before finally killing them. The blue house itself was unchanged, just as old and sagging and dusty as it had been before. But as N2Ni led the way to the bedroom door, Card noted that the odor of age and sickness had vanished. And this time, the door opened by itself as they approached. Steeling himself, only vaguely aware that Shada had deftly inserted a shoulder in front of him, the two of them together stepped through the door. The built-in shelves with all their useless knick-knacks and exotic medical supplies were gone. The sick bed and its stacks of blankets were gone. And standing where the bed had been, still just as old, but now as vitally alive as he had been feeble then, was Georges Cardass.
Oh, God!
Cardass said, the vast network of facial wrinkles shifting as he smiled.
It's good to see you again. Not that it's been all that long,
Card said stiffly.
I congratulate you on your amazing recovery.
The smile didn't even falter.
You're angry with me, of course,
Cardass said calmly.
I understand that, but it'll all become clear soon. In the meantime...
He half turned and waved at the back wall. And abruptly, the wall was no longer there. In its place was a long tunnel, equipped with four guider rails that faded off into the distance. Just beyond where the wall had been, an enclosed quad-rail car was waiting.
Let me take you across to my real home,
Cardass continued.
It's much more comfortable than this place.
He waved a hand toward the car, and a side door swung invitingly open in response.
Please, after you.
Card looked at the open door, an odd tightness squeezing his heart. Predators playing with their prey.
Why don't just you and I go? He offered instead. Shada and 3PO can return to the wild card.
No.
Shada cut him off firmly.
You want to show someone around, Cardass? You take me. Then if I decide it's safe, I'll consider letting Card join us.
Really?
Cardass said, regarding her with such obvious amusement that Card found himself cringing. Being amused at someone like Shada wasn't an especially healthy thing to do.
Such quick and short-tempered loyalty you inspire in your people, Card.
She's not one of my people, Card told him quickly. She was asked to come along by High Counselor Leia Organa Solo of the New Republic. She has absolutely nothing to do with me or with anything I might have done in the past.
Please,
Cardass interrupted, holding up a hand.
I admit this is highly entertaining to watch, but in all seriousness, you're both worrying about nothing.
He looked Card straight in the eye.
I'm not the man you once knew, Talon,
he said quietly.
Please give me the chance to prove that.
Card let his eyes drift away from that unblinking gaze. Predators playing with their prey. But if Cardass truly wanted them dead, it didn't really matter whether they played along or not. All right, he said. Come on, Sheeta.
Excuse me, sir.
3PO spoke up hesitantly.
I presume you won't be needing me any further.
No, no, please,
Cardass said, waving the droid forward.
I'd love to sit down later and have a chat with you. It's been such a long time since I've had anyone I could speak old Tarmidian with.
He smiled over at N2Ni.
N2Ni tries, but it's not the same.
Not really, no.
N2Ni conceded regretfully.
So please, join us.
Cardass added to 3PO.
By the way, you don't also happen to know the Chincher dialectory, do you?
3PO seemed to brighten.
Of course I do, sir,
he said, pride temporarily superseding nervousness.
I am fluent in over 6 billion for...
Excellent,
Cardass said.
Let's be going, then.
A minute later, they were all in the quadrail car, speeding smoothly down the tunnel.
I mostly keep to myself these days,
Cardass commented.
Well, occasionally I still need to deal with Exocron officialdom. I use that house back there for such meetings. It's convenient, and keeps them from being overawed by my real home.
They know who you are?
Sheeta asked, her tone just short of a demand.
I mean, who you really are?
Cardass shrugged.
They have bits and pieces of my past,
he said.
But as you'll soon see, much of that history is now irrelevant.
Well, before we get to history, let's try some current events,
Sheeta said.
Starting with these Ang-Ti monks of yours. David can spin his anti-slaver slant all he wants, but we all know there's more to it than that. You called them in, didn't you?
The Ang-Ti and I have had some dealings together,
Cardass agreed soberly, his wrinkled face thoughtful. Abruptly, he smiled.
Well, that's history again, isn't it? All in its proper time.
Fine, Sheeta said. Let's try again. David says you didn't use us to lure Ray Koss in. I say you did.
Cardass looked at Card.
I like her, Talon,
he declared.
She has a fine spirit.
He shifted his eyes to Sheeta.
I don't suppose you'd be interested in a new job, would you?
I wasted a dozen years with a smuggling gang, Cardass,
Sheeta growled.
I'm not interested in joining another.
Ah,
he said with a nod.
Forgive me. Here we are.
The tunnel had come to an end in a small, well-lighted room. Cardass popped the door and bounded out as the quad rail slid smoothly to a stop.
Come, come,
he urged the others.
You're gonna love this place, Talon. You really are. Are you ready? Let's go.
Almost bouncing with childlike anticipation, he led the way to an archway-topped door. He waved his hand as he approached, and as the wall at the Blue House had done, the door simply vanished. And stretched out beyond the doorway was a dream world. Card stepped through, his first impression being that they had stepped out into the open air, into a meticulously tended garden. Directly in front of them was a wide expanse of flowers and small plants and shrubs, all carefully and artistically arranged, stretching out for perhaps 100 meters ahead of them. A winding path led through the garden, with stone benches set at various points along it. At its side edges, the garden gave way to a forest of tall trees of dozens of different species,
with leaves whose colors varied from dark blue to brilliant red. From somewhere within the forest came the bubbling sound of water running over a rock-bottomed creek. But from their position, he couldn't see where it was. It wasn't until he followed the tallest trees up to their tops that he spotted the sky-blue dome above them. A dome that flowed down into unobtrusive walls behind the stands of trees.
Yes, it's all inside,
Cardass confirmed.
Very much inside, in fact. We're under one of the mountains to the east of Rintana City. Beautiful, isn't it?
You tend it yourself? Card asked.
I do most of the work,
Cardass said, starting forward toward the path.
But there are a few others as well. This way!
He led them through the garden to a concealed door between two red-trunked trees on the far side.
Must have been some job putting all this together,
Shada commented as the door again vanished at a wave of Cardass's hand.
Your Angti friends help?
In an indirect way, yes,
Cardass said.
This is my conversation room. As beautiful as the garden in its own way.
Yes, Card agreed, looking around. The conversation room was laid out in more or less classic High Alderaanian style, done up in dark wood and intertwined plants, with the same feeling of expansiveness as the garden outside.
What did you mean by indirect help?
It's rather ironic, really,
Cardass said, angling off through the conversation room toward a door to their right.
When I arrived on Exocron, I started building my home under these mountains, purely for defensive reasons. Now that defense is no longer an issue, I find I enjoy the place for its solitude.
Card glanced at Shada. Defense no longer an issue? Was Rekas that much of a threat? Cardass frowned.
Rekas? Oh, no, Talon. You misunderstand. Rekas was a threat, certainly, but only to the rest of Exocron. I helped get rid of him in order to protect my neighbors. But I myself was in no danger at all. Come! You'll particularly want to see this.
He waved the door away and gestured them forward. Card stepped inside and stopped in amazement. He was standing at the outer rim of a circular room that appeared to be even bigger across than the garden they just left. The floor of the room dipped, amphitheater fashion, toward the center, where he could see the edge of what looked like a workstation or computer desk. Arrayed in concentric circles around the desk, with only narrow walkways separating them, were circle after circle of 2-meter-high data cases. And filling each of the shelves on each of the data cases were data cards. Thousands and thousands of data cards.
Knowledge, Talon,
Cardass said quietly from beside him.
Information. My passion once. My weapon and my defense. And my comfort.
He shook his head.
Amazing, isn't it? While we sometimes persuade ourselves are the most important things in life.
Yes,
Card murmured. Cardass's library and the Ka'amas document.
So Antuni lied to us,
Shada spoke up, the edge in her voice cutting into Card's sense of wonder.
He said he didn't know what happened to your library.
Antuni!
Cardass called.
Did you lie to them?
Not at all, Georges.
Antuni's distant voice protested from behind them. Card turned to see the little man still on the far side of the conversation room, busying himself with drinks.
I merely said that whatever you had done with it had been done before I came to be in your service.
Which is perfectly true,
Cardass agreed, gesturing them back out of the library.
But come, sit down. I know you have so many questions.
Let me start with the most important one,
Card said, not moving.
The reason we came here was to look for a vitally important historical document. It involves...
Yes, I know,
Cardass said with a sigh.
The Ka'amas document.
You know about that?
Shada asked.
I'm not the frail, bedridden old man you met a few hours ago,
Cardass reminded her mildly.
I still have a few sources of information, and I try to keep in touch with what's happening back home.
He shook his head.
Unfortunately, I can't help you. As soon as the Carl Moss matter first broke, I checked through all my files to see if I had a copy. But I'm afraid I don't.
Card felt his heart sink. You're absolutely sure? Cardass nodded.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Card nodded back. After all the work and danger in getting here, there it was. The end of the road. And at its finish, an empty hand. Shada wasn't ready to let it go quite that easily.
And what if you had found a copy?
She demanded.
You can talk all you want about keeping in touch, but the fact is that for the past 20 years, you've been taking it easy out here, and letting everyone else do all the work.
Cardass lifted his eyebrows.
Suspicious and unforgiving both,
he commented.
That's rather sad. Isn't there anyone or anything you trust?
I'm a professional bodyguard,
Shada bit out.
Trust isn't part of the job. And don't try to change the subject. You sat out the whole rebellion, not to mention Thrawn's first bid for power. Why?
Something unreadable flicked across Cardass's face.
Thrawn,
he murmured, his eyes sweeping slowly around his library.
A most interesting person indeed. I have most of his history with the Empire on file here. Pulled it all out recently, reading through it. There's more to his story than meets the eye. I'm convinced of it. Far more.
You still haven't answered my question,
Shada said. Cardass lifted his eyebrows.
I wasn't aware you'd asked one,
he said.
All I heard were accusations that I've been letting others do all the work. But if that was intended as a question...
He smiled.
I suppose it's true, in a way. But only in a way. I've merely let others do their work, while I've been doing mine. But come, Entune's Ruskti will be getting cold.
He led the way across the conversation room to the sunken circle. Entune was waiting patiently there, his now loaded tray set on a pillar table.
What have you told the lady about me, Talon?
Cardass asked, as he gestured the two of them to seats on one side of the circle.
Just to avoid repeating things.
I've told her the basics, Card said, gingerly sitting down.
Despite all of the geniality and surface friendliness, he couldn't shake the feeling that there was something more going on beneath the surface.
How you started the organization, then abruptly left 20 years ago.
And did you tell her about my kidnapping by the Bifashi Dark Jedi?
Cardass asked, his tone suddenly odd.
That's where it all really began.
Card threw a glance at Shada.
I mentioned it, yes.
Cardass sighed, not looking up at Entune as the latter put a steaming cup into his hands.
It was a terrible experience,
he said quietly, gazing into the cup.
Possibly the first time in my life I'd felt truly and genuinely terrified. He was half mad with rage, maybe more than half mad, with all of Darth Vader's power and none of his self-control. One of my crewmen, he physically ripped to shreds, literally tearing his body apart. The other three, he took over mentally, twisting and searing their minds and turning them into little more than living extensions of himself. Me.
He took a careful sip of his drink.
Me. He left mostly alone,
he continued.
I'm still not sure why. Unless he thought he might need my knowledge of ports and space lanes to make his escape. Or perhaps he simply wanted an intact mind left aboard, who could recognize his power and greatness and be properly frightened by it.
He sipped again.
We headed across the space lanes, dodging or avoiding the forces gathering against him. I thought up scheme after scheme to defeat him as we traveled, none of which ever made it past the planning stage, for the simple reason that he knew about each of them almost before I did. I got the feeling that my pitiful efforts greatly amused him. Finally, for reasons I still don't entirely understand, we made for a little backwater system, not even important enough to make it onto most of the charts. A planet with nothing but swamps and dank forests and frozen slush. A planet named Dagobah.
There's a whiff of some exotic spice from Card's side, and he looked up to see N2Ni hand him his cup. The little man's usual cheerful expression had vanished, replaced by a profound seriousness Card had never seen in him before.
I don't know if the Dark Jedi expected to be all alone down there,
Card S. went on.
But if he did, he was quickly disappointed. We barely stepped outside the ship when we spotted a funny-looking little creature with big pointed ears standing at the edge of the clearing where we'd put down. It was a Jedi Master named Yoda. I don't know whether that was his home or whether he had just flown in specially for the occasion. What I do know is that he was definitely waiting for us.
An odd shiver ran through Cardass's thin body.
I won't try to describe the battle,
he said in a low voice.
Even after 45 years of thinking about it, I'm not sure I can. For nearly a day and a half, the swamp blazed with fire and lightning, and things I still don't understand. At the end of it, the Dark Jedi was dead, disintegrating in a final massive blaze of blue fire.
He took a shuddering breath.
None of my crew survived that battle. Not that there was much left of what they'd been anyway. I didn't expect to survive either. But to my surprise, Yoda took it upon himself to nurse me back to life.
Card nodded. I've seen a little of what Luke Skywalker can do with healing trances, he said. Better than Bacta in some cases. Card S. snorted.
In my case, Bacta would have been completely useless,
he stated flatly.
As it was, it took Yoda quite a while to return me to health. I still don't know how long. Afterward, I was able to jerry-rig the ship well enough to get it space-worthy and limp home. It wasn't until I was back with the organization that I began to realize that somewhere in that whole procedure, some part of me had been changed.
He looked at Card.
I'm sure you remember, Talon. I seem to have gained the ability to outthink my opponents, to guess the strategies and plans, to know when one of them was planning a move against me. Abilities I assumed I'd somehow absorbed from Yoda during the healing process.
He looked up at the ceiling, a new fire in his eyes and voice.
And suddenly, there were no limits to what I could do. None. I began expanding the organization, swallowing up any group that seemed potentially useful and eliminating everyone that didn't. Victory after victory after victory. Everywhere I went, I conquered. I saw the Hutt's criminal cartels and planned how I would take them down. Foresaw the gathering of power around Senator Palpatine and considered where and how I could best insert myself into the coming struggle for my own advantage. There was literally nothing that could stop me, and I and the universe both knew it.
Abruptly, the fire faded away.
And then,
he said quietly,
without warning, everything suddenly collapsed.
He took a long drink from his cup.
What happened?
Shada asked into the silence. Card stole a look at her, mildly surprised at the intense concentration in her expression. Despite all her professed distrust of Cardass himself, She clearly found his story riveting.
My health fell apart,
Cardass said.
Over a period of just a few weeks, all the youth and vigor that Yoda's healing had woven into my body seemed to evaporate.
He looked at Shada.
Very simply, I was dying.
Card nodded. The last mystery of that beckon call lying abandoned in the Dagobah swamp suddenly falling into place.
And so you went back to Yoda and asked for help?
Asked?
Cardass gave a short, self-deprecating laugh.
Not asked, Talon. Demanded.
He shook his head at the memory.
It must have looked quite absurd, really. There I stood, towering over him with a blaster in one hand and my beckon call in the other, threatening to bring my ship and all its awesome weaponry to bear on this short, wizened creature leaning on a staff in front of me. Of course, I was the single-handed creator of the greatest smuggling organization of all time. Well, he was nothing but a simple little Jedi master.
He shook his head again.
I'm surprised he didn't kill you on the spot,
Shada said.
At the time, I almost wished he had,
Cardass said ruefully.
It would have been far less humiliating. Instead, he simply took the beckon call and blaster away from me and sent them spinning off into the swamp, then held me suspended a few centimeters above the ground and let me scream and flail to my heart's content. And when I finally ran out of strength and breath, he told me I was going to die.
N2 Nee stepped to his side, silently pouring more of the spice drink into his cup.
I thought the first part had been humiliating,
Cardass went on.
The next part was worse. As I sat there panting on a rock, swamp water seeping into my boots, he told me in exquisitely painful detail just how badly I'd squandered the gift of life he'd given back to me a quarter century earlier. How my utterly selfish pursuit of personal power and aggrandizement had left me empty of spirit and vacant of purpose.
He looked at Card.
By the time he finished, I knew I could never go back. That I could never ever face any of you again.
Card looked down at his cup, suddenly aware he was gripping it tightly.
Then you didn't... I mean, you weren't...
Angry with you?
Cardass smiled at him.
On the contrary, old friend. You were the single bright spot in the whole painful mess. For the first time since I'd left Dagobah, I found myself thinking about all the people in my organization. People who I'd now abandoned to the viciousness of internecine warfare as my lieutenants, most of them as selfish as I was, fought for their individual slices of the fat Brualki I'd created.
He shook his head, his old eyes almost misty.
I didn't hate you for taking over, Talon. Far from it. You held the organization together, treated my people with the dignity and respect they deserved. The dignity and respect I'd never bothered to give them. You transformed my selfish ambition into something to be proud of. And for 20 years, I've wanted to thank you for that.
And to Card's surprise, he stood up and crossed the circle.
Thank you,
he said simply, holding out his hand. Card stood up, a terrible weight lifting from his shoulders.
You're welcome,
he murmured, gripping the extended hand.
I just wish I'd known sooner.
I know,
Cardass said, letting go and returning to his seat.
But as I said, for the first few years I was too ashamed to even face you. And then later, when Yamara Jade and Lando Calrissian came sniffing around, I assumed you would soon be showing up yourself.
I should have, Card conceded. But I wasn't exactly eager to do so.
I understand,
Cardass said.
It's as much my fault as it was yours.
He waved a hand.
Still, as it turned out, your arrival was just what we needed to eliminate the threat from Ray Koss and his pirates.
He pointed toward the ceiling.
That's one of the many things I've been learning from the Yang-Ti, in fact. Though not all is predetermined, all is somehow still being guided. I still don't quite understand that, but I'm working on it.
Sounds like something a Jedi would say,
Card suggested.
Similar, but not the same,
Cardass agreed.
The Yang-Ti have an understanding of the Force, but it's a different understanding from that of the Jedi. Or perhaps it's merely a different aspect of the Force that they relate to. I'm not really sure which. Yoda couldn't heal me, you see. Or rather, didn't have the time the task would require. He told me he needed to prepare for what he said was possibly the most important instruction he had had for the past 100 years.
Card nodded. Another piece of the puzzle falling into place.
Luke Skywalker.
Was it him?
Cardass asked.
I've always suspected that, but was never able to confirm he actually trained on Dagobah. At any rate, Yoda said my only chance to postpone my death was to seek out the Yang-Ti monks of the Cathal Rift, who might be willing to help me.
Card gestured toward him.
Obviously, they did.
Oh, yes, they did,
Cardass said, his mouth twisting wryly.
But at what price?
Card frowned, a shiver running through him.
What kind of price?
Cardass smiled.
Nothing less than my life, Talon,
he said.
My life to be spent learning their ways of the Force.
He held up a hand.
Don't misunderstand, please. It wasn't their demand, but my choice. All my life, you see, I've relished challenges. The bigger the better, once I'd gotten a taste of what they had discovered out here.
He waved his hand around the room.
It was the biggest challenge I'd ever faced. How could I pass it up?
I thought you needed a certain amount of inborn aptitude to be a Jedi,
Shada pointed out.
A Jedi, perhaps,
Cardass nodded.
But as I said, the Yang-Ti have a different view of the Force. Not in terms of Jedi and Dark Jedi, of black and white, as it were. But in a way, I like to think of it as a full-color rainbow. Here, let me show you. Would you move your tray, please, Antuni?
The little man picked up the tray, leaving the pillar table empty, as Cardass set his cup down on the floor in front of him.
Now watch,
he said, rubbing his hands together.
Let's see if I can do this.
He settled his shoulders and gazed hard at the pillar table. And abruptly, with a sharp pop of displaced air, a small crystalline decanter appeared. Card jerked violently, his drink sloshing up the side of his cup and over the edge onto his fingers. Never in any of his dealings with Skywalker or Mara had he seen anything like that.
It's all right,
Cardass said hastily.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to startle you.
You created that?
Shada asked, her voice sounding stunned.
No, no, of course not,
Cardass assured her.
I merely moved it in here from the cooking area. One of the little tricks the Yang-Ti taught me. The idea is to see the room, and then envision it with the decanter already here.
He broke off, retrieving his cup and getting to his feet.
I'm sorry. I could go on all day about the Yang-Ti and the Force, but you're both tired, and I'm neglecting my duties as host. Let me show you to your rooms, and let you relax for a while I see about a meal.
That's very kind of you,
Card said, standing up and shaking the drops of spice drink off his fingers.
But I'm afraid we have to leave. If you can't provide us with a Kar Mas document, we need to start back to New Republic space right away.
I understand your commitments and obligations, Talon,
Cardass said.
But you can certainly afford to take one night just to relax.
I wish we could, Card said, trying not to sound too impatient. I really do, but...
Besides, if you leave now, it'll actually take you much longer to get home,
Cardass added.
I've spoken to the Yang-Ti, and they've agreed to send a ship tomorrow to carry the wild card anywhere you want to go.
And how does that gain us anything?
Shada asked.
It gains you because their star drive is considerably different from ours,
Cardass told her.
As you may have noticed from the battle, instead of using the usual hyperspace travel, their ships are able to make an instantaneous jump to whatever point they wish to go to.
Card looked at Shada. You were on the spotterscopes, he said. Was that what they were doing? She shrugged.
It's as good an explanation as any,
she conceded.
I know Hisishi scrubbed the data, and she couldn't figure out what had happened either.
She looked suspiciously at Cardass.
So why can't they do this for us now?
Because I told them you wouldn't need the ship until morning,
Cardass said with a smile.
Come now! Indulge an old man's desire for company, won't you? I'm sure your crew could use a good night's rest, too, after all they've been through on this trip.
Card shook his head in defeat. Still a master manipulator, aren't you, George? The smile widened.
A man can change only so much,
he said genially.
And while they're freshening up,
he added, shifting his eyes to 3PO,
you can come help me cook while we have our talk.
Certainly, sir. Do you know I have become quite a fair chef during my service to Princess Leia and her family?
Wonderful,
Cardass said.
Perhaps you could teach me some of your culinary expertise. Why don't you call your ship, Talon, and tell them to settle down until morning? And then I'll show you and the lady to your rooms.